Welcome to the Wellness Family Summit. Today, I am so excited to have Katie from WellnessMama.com with us. Katie is a wife and mama of five who writes at WellnessMama.com. Her first book, The Wellness Mama Cookbook, will be available this month, and her podcast, The Wellness Mama Podcast, has reached number one in the health category on iTunes. Her mission is to help empower other moms and families to create positive and practical changes for their families. So, Katie, thanks for being here with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Excellent. Now, I want to jump in and talk to you about your family and your process with real food, because I know a lot of people are itching to know how they can start a real food and natural living lifestyle with their own family. So how did you get into this real food movement in the first place? Was there a pivotal moment for you, or was it a gradual process?
That's a good question, and I think there's a value in this story. I'll try to tell it in a first, like a not taking too long, but I think there's value in it. I was always the type A child, and my parents had all big expectations for college, and I was there on a scholarship, and I always had this quest for truth, but back then I thought it was going to be through politics and journalism and revealing the truth and helping fix all these problems in the world. So that's what I was pursuing, and I was pursuing journalism and international affairs, international law, and I loved it because I felt like I was on a quest. And when I was finishing that up and at the point of maybe pursuing a career in that, someone who had been in the industry for years told me, there's no such thing as objective journalism. There's no such thing as objective truth. If you go into journalism, you're always going to be working for somebody. You're always going to be promoting an agenda. And I trusted this person. They've been in the industry forever, and they still are. And I just realized that wasn't what I wanted. That wasn't my goal. And so I kind of reevaluated and ended up getting another degree in nutrition, which I just loved from a practical standpoint, because I really just thought it was fascinating and learning more about the body. But ironically, even though those two things, I had the background in them, the pivotal moment didn't really happen until I had our first child. So after this point, my husband and I had gotten married, and we had our first baby, which it didn't go exactly as I planned, but I don't think it ever does with your first. So I was sitting at the doctor's office for my follow-up appointment, and still a little bit kind of raw from the pain of the birth and it not being how I wanted. And then to make it worse, he was running behind. So I had been sitting there for like 2 hours with a 6-week-old baby who was fussy and wanted to nurse. And so I'm nursing the baby and trying to just kill time and going, trying to read through magazines. And it was like all like People magazine and all these magazines I just wasn't interested in. So I flipped to the only one that seemed somewhat like a news or health magazine. And I wish I could remember which one it was, but I'm flipping through. And of course I'm a hormonal new mom. So I stop on a picture of a baby and like just glancing through the article, and there's a quote that's kind of in a quote box in bold, like they do in a magazine. And it said, for the first time in over 200 years, the current generation of American children will have a shorter life expectancy than their parents. And it hit me like, holy cow, this is the next generation of American children. My baby is the next generation of American children. And that's the statistics for him. And this article started talking about how they were going to have like a 1 in 2 chance of cancer and a 1 in 2 chance of heart disease and autoimmune disease and diabetes. And it was just such a striking difference looking at him and how tiny and perfect he was and realizing that was his future. And even though the process of actually creating the blog took a lot longer than I expected, and especially letting it come into its own voice, it was that moment that was the lightning bolt for me of, I want to use whatever I can from my background, from learning about nutrition and learning about journalism and that wanting to expose the truth, to really find out what we can do to change that future for our children and for the next generations. And obviously, like, I've helped with the summit as well, and you saw that probably on the registration video, but that really is, at the end of the day, my mission and the thing that keeps me awake at night. And now we have 5 children, and the mission's even stronger, because I don't just have one of the next generation, I have 5 of them. And even just to see their peers and their friends and to realize that's the future if we don't change things. But at the same time, like, it's also not all doom and gloom, because when you look at the statistics, we really still can change things. And I think it's funny, because my original idea was to do that through policy and through the government and through the news. And now I realize the answer was kind of in front of me and more simple to begin with, which is that we as parents really have that power, because on the practical side, we control the food budget. We are buying the groceries that feed the next generation. We're cooking the food that feeds the next generation. We're creating the lifestyle that either causes these health problems or avoids it. So we have that practical power, but then also we're shaping those children. We're shaping their experiences, and we're teaching them how they should eat and how they should live. So if we can teach them in a loving and gentle way at a young age to choose a healthier lifestyle, then we don't have to have that future for our kids. So that was my kind of pivotal moment and how I got into it. And I think a lot of parents can probably relate to that, because it seems like becoming a parent really helps you to do things you may not do for just yourself, and it gives you a bigger purpose. And so my hope with the summit and with my blog and with everything I do is that more parents will unite around that purpose and realize this kind of is, it's make or break time. It's do or die right now for our kids, and we really need to get serious about this and start making changes while we still can.
Absolutely. And that statistic that was your pivotal turning moment, I think that is just so eye-opening. And I know myself as a mom, and probably all the moms who are watching and listening, when we hear that, it just sends like a shudder down our entire bodies, because like you said, you know, it's not, once you have a family, it's not just you anymore, and you have that protective instinct and nature with your children. And so when you hear that statistic in reference to yourself, you may just think, you may be able to brush it off easier. But for some reason, when you hear that about your children, it is just a total game changer, just like it was for you. And so I think that is an incredible purpose and reason behind everything you do. So now that we know a little bit about your motivation behind this, can you tell us a little bit about your own personal health journey? What did that look like? Did your health drastically change after the moment that you had in the pediatrician's office, or was it a longer journey for you?
I wish I could say that, yes, at that lightning bolt moment, I just magically knew everything I should know and did it all perfectly all the time. But I joke, and I think we've even joked about this before, that there are two kinds of moms in the world: those who feel like they always could do better and they always could change something, and those who are liars, because no mom goes to bed at night just being like, I got this. I am the bomb at motherhood. I totally have this figured out. So it was definitely a learning process. And even just the practical side, because I had this degree in nutrition, but there was a really big emphasis on what I had been taught on a lot of whole grains, low calorie, low fat. Even the course I went through, there was a very big leaning towards just no animal products at all. And so I really had to find out for myself what was the truth with a lot of these things, and realized that when I had worked with clients on some of these things, they weren't getting results, and realized, even like, take some humility and realize when I did them, I wasn't getting results, and it wasn't because I wasn't doing them, even though that's the tendency in American society, is to like look at, well, if you're not, you know, if you're not losing weight, you're not getting healthier, then you have to work out harder, or you have to eat even less. And one of our other speakers, I think Dr. Christensen, could explain this so much better than I can. He's my doctor now, but he says, like, your body's so intuitive and it knows. And when you put it under stress, which can be like, you're stressed because you're not losing weight, or you're stressed because you have a tough job, whatever your stress is, it feels like there's a crisis coming. And the only way the body knows how to handle a coming crisis is to save resources. So if you hit a famine, you can survive. So you start, your body starts hoarding all this, so you gain weight. And then what does culture tell you to do? It tells you to eat less. And then your body's like, huh, got it. I knew this was coming, so I'm just going to hoard even more. And, you know, just a practical way that explains it, I'm sure his talk will explain it even more in depth. So I had created all these health problems for myself. And it also went back even farther than that. Even as far as high school, I was just, like I mentioned, I was so type A. I was in, you know, over 20 different organizations and clubs and sports teams, and I pushed myself to the limit really hard. But I always thought, you know, as long as I didn't gain weight back then, I was healthy, and that's all that really healthy was. So I just kept pushing and got a good scholarship to a good school, and did the same thing in college, and took like 24, 28 hours some semesters. And that whole time was sleeping like 2 or 3 hours and eating junk food because I could get away with it, especially in high school. I'm sure those were probably, you know, soy burgers or something that we were eating that had no nutritional value. And so I created this whole problem for myself with my lifestyle and just being so type A, I always operated under a huge level of stress. And I thought it actually made me more productive because when I'm stressed and I'm busy, I actually love it. From a mental standpoint, I thrive and I love being busy. But realizing, especially after seeing my body start hitting these roadblocks, that was one of those things I needed to step back and address. And then it went beyond that. So my own struggle really began, other than just minor issues, after I started having children. And logical, many women see that happen because pregnancy is a big stress on your body. And things that your body may have been handling just fine on their own, when you combine them with pregnancy, the body kind of gets even more stressed and tends to, the problems that were already there on a lower level tend to sort of crop up and get bigger. So after my first child, I had a little bit of difficulty losing the weight, not that much, but more than I expected, which may just be common. Many women may struggle with that. But I was finally kind of able to, but I also just started noticing symptoms that I now know go along with thyroid problems, but things like just being cold, having dry skin, my hair started falling out a little bit, but I always thought, you even hear that in the pregnancy books, that your hair falls out after pregnancy, so I just assumed that was normal. And then we had our next child a year and a half later, so my body didn't have a ton of time to recover. And then after that, things really kind of started snowballing, and I was having all these symptoms and even skin issues that got really bad after one of the pregnancies, and just I had like a whole body allergic reaction, and I couldn't figure out to what. And I knew certain foods were bothering me, and I was trying to pinpoint those and learn this as I went, since there weren't really that many good resources at that point. Thankfully, there are a lot of great resources now, but I was trying to figure this out as I went. And I went to so many doctors. Every time I was pregnant, I would have my midwife test me for thyroid problems, for low vitamin D, for everything I knew to test for. And the answer would always be the same. Well, you're a little bit low, but really not clinically low, so we can't really do anything, but we're just going to keep an eye on it. And it was always, and you know, if it gets bad or if you get nodules on your thyroid or cancer, then we'll deal with something. And I always was like, wait, what? You're going to wait till I get cancer to deal with something? So finally, after I think it was 8 total doctors, finally found a good doctor who is an expert, Dr. Christensen, who I mentioned. And I think I'm allowed to tell you this, even though you probably can't because of confidentiality, but he's been the best doctor. He ran such a comprehensive panel of tests. He did a thyroid ultrasound, which no one had ever bothered to do before, and found nodules on my thyroid that could have become cancerous had we not found them. So now we finally are in a holistic plan, and we're seeing all my levels improve. We're seeing the nodules go away. And I can definitely talk about the whole diet and lifestyle process of that. But it's been a whole journey for me, and I feel like it took me so long to find health answers, especially when I was still trying to make the conventional paradigm work and what we're always told. And I always felt like I'm not doing it right. I'm not doing it enough. I'm not working hard enough. And then to find real answers and realize, no, actually, like, working out so hard and killing yourself when you have a thyroid problem is the opposite of what you're supposed to do. And starving yourself is the opposite of what you're supposed to do. So it's been this whole journey for me that's spanned almost a decade now. And that really is the purpose in writing the blog, is I don't want other moms to have to search so hard and to have to read through medical journals and to go through 8 doctors and to have all these problems with sleep and skin and digestion and hair and everything else before they find the answers. It's really been a change for us. And I'll definitely take you through the whole lifestyle and dietary changes that we've made. But that was my journey. And I think everyone's still a work in progress, too. I'm definitely not there. I'm definitely not exactly where I want to be. I don't think anyone ever gets exactly where they want to be, but I'm finally making progress, and I'm finally seeing my symptoms go away and my blood levels go away, and I'm just really excited to be able to share that with other people and hopefully shorten the length of that journey for them.
That's excellent. And the whole point that you made about when our body is under stress and it prepares itself for, you know, what could come, for, you know, whether it be famine or, you know, running from danger, you know, our body goes into that stress mode, and so it hoards. And that makes such logical sense. Yet at the same time, because of what we're fed in the culture, like you mentioned, it's kind of a counterintuitive for the way that, you know, we've been formed to think in terms of, you know, well, I just got to cut down on the calories and I just got to exercise more so I can burn off more calories. It's just a total paradigm shift. Now, you mentioned, Katie, about how, again, how stress can affect our ability to be healthy. And On a practical level, I want to ask you about how you ended up handling that, because you mentioned that you're a kind of personality that thrives on being busy. I'm the same way, and I'm sure a lot of people out there are, especially for parents. I mean, they're busy whether they thrive in busyness or not, and it seems that everybody in general is busy these days. So can you give us some practical advice on how to still thrive but not fill our plates to the point where it's going to be detrimental to our health?
That's a really good question, and it definitely one I still do imperfectly all the time, but I'm on a journey with. Because also now that I have the blog, I feel like I have this twofold mission, with motherhood always being my most important, but also that I want to help other people with the blog. So it's a constant pull, and I think the key of it is, well, for me, there's a two-sided thing. So part of it is the practical side of planning, and then the other part of it is learning yourself and learning your boundaries, and then putting rules in place that take the stress off and that make sure you're getting sleep and regenerating. So for the practical side for me, it's become a whole process of every week I make sure that I meal plan very carefully, so I have an exact shopping list when I go to the grocery store, so I know exactly what I need to cook and when, and so that I can cut down on preparation time and maybe make 6 meals at one time, put them in the fridge so they can just go in the oven when I need them, or pre-cook a lot of vegetables for the week so I can add them to a stir fry in the morning or a soup at lunch, and just thinking ahead so I'm not wasting time, and so it's not dinner time and I have nothing ready and then I'm stressed because of that. So the planning is huge for me. That helps tame my inner type A. And the other thing that practically has helped me a ton, there's a book called A Mother's Rule of Life, and it's written from a Christian perspective, but honestly, I think it's applicable to anyone, because what she basically does is takes you through, like, if you look at any order of people, and she uses religious orders as an example, they function very smoothly. As a general rule, they typically have a lot of peace in their community. And part of it is that they have a structure for their day. And nobody ever is wondering, like, when are we going to eat? When do we need to do this? When do we need to do that? They already know ahead of time what time of day meals are going to happen and what time of day prayer is going to happen, for instance, or what time of day cleaning is going to happen. It's all fit into their schedule. So I started adopting that in my own life and realizing that if I could pre-plan a lot of the stuff that was always hanging over my head, and I think a lot of moms can sympathize with that. You know, as a mom, there's always the laundry and I need to pick up the kids, and then we have to run to here, and then there's a meeting for this, and then I have to cook dinner, and it's just always hanging over your head. So if I pre-scheduled when I was going to do laundry and what time of day I was going to do dishes and which kids were going to help with what chores at what time and whose responsibilities were whose, and even like bedtimes and when we were going to, down to brushing teeth and cutting nails. But if everything had a time and a place, then none of those things were hanging over my head and stressing me out when I wasn't doing them, because I knew when I was eating lunch with the kids that laundry was going to happen at a certain time. I even knew when I was homeschooling that I was going to get time to just relax and read or journal or whatever it was for 10 minutes while the kids were doing chores or napping. And so just having that helped me a ton, and it also helped the kids a ton, because it wasn't like, Mom, can we do this? Can we do this? They knew when things were going to happen. So when we're able to really stay on our schedule like that, it just is so much less stress for everybody in the family, because even the kids know it's going to be lunch at this time and we're going to go outside and play at this time, and oh, at this time I have to do all my chores, but they just know it's coming. So it really reduces the stress a lot. So that's been the practical side. And then the part that I really struggle with is the mental side myself, of just letting it go. And I'm experimenting with some fun things that I'm going to be sharing soon on that. Things like wearing a heart rate monitor on my wrist to kind of track times of day when I start getting stressed. There are even now monitors that let you train your heart rate so that when you start getting stressed, you can train yourself to reduce stress. So I'm experimenting with a lot of those, and I'm actually seeing some good results. But those are my biggest tips for stepping back from the stress and learning how to mind over matter, but just how to let it go and to figure out a structure that lets you do that.
That's excellent. That's such great advice. And I feel like the old adage can apply here. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure in terms of planning. You know, just an ounce of planning can really set your week or your 2 weeks or your month, however far in advance you want to plan, it can really set you up for success and not so much stress, which is great for everyone. Now, Katie, what about your kids? I know a lot of families that are listening and watching, may have a family member or two or three who aren't necessarily thrilled about maybe some of the lifestyle changes that may be implemented. And it always seems to be the toughest part for people, just getting their family on board. So how did this work with your family, and what steps did you take to get your family on board with a healthier lifestyle?
Great question. Yeah, I think in a sense, the deciding to do it is the easy part, especially like if I did, you realize how much we really are up against and how this really is our last chance. So the deciding is the easy part, but the implementing is always the hard part. And so like I mentioned, the meal planning helps a lot with that, and the scheduling helps a lot with that. But that doesn't fix, of course, like children or even a husband who don't love the meal choices or don't love that now all of your soap smells like lavender or that they're cleaning with baking soda. So for us, that was a little bit of a gradual process. Although being so type A, as I learned stuff, I kind of went cold turkey with it, which for us ended up seemed to work out more easily, because then it was a few days. It was like ripping off a Band-Aid. You had a few days and then everybody kind of adjusted. But it was definitely the hardest with our older children, because they had we never ate definitely like a processed food diet completely, especially once we had kids. We were never just eating fast food, but they had been exposed to more commercial foods, especially at events or parties, than the younger ones had. So they were a little bit more in shock when we totally cut those things out. So the way we deal with it now, for the most part, well, at our house, we never have any of those foods at all. And then I'll talk in a few minutes about how we like implement with the kids, how they make decisions when they're out and not with us, because I think that's really important for emotional health. But practically, I just cleaned up my kitchen. I cleaned up our home. I got rid of chemicals. If it had a label on it that said that I had to call the poison control center if my child drank it or ate it, it was gone. So we got rid of everything from laundry detergent to makeup to commercial nail polishes to cleaners to, I mean, most things that people have in their pantry that you probably should call a poison control center if your child eats. And we just got rid of all of them. And then with meal planning, we focused just on nutrient-rich, dense whole foods. And I realized that if I could make things delicious, they didn't really mind that they were missing certain foods. That was really my goal in the beginning, was to, even if I had to figure out real food alternatives to foods that they already loved, to do that and just make sure they were more nutrient dense and that they were avoiding common allergens. So I would make things like real food shepherd's pie that still tasted great and still had a lot of flavors that they were used to, but that had more vegetables and more nutrients and even more herbs and spices. So that was part of the slow transition. But along the way, we actually found out our third child had some allergy issues that really prompted us to jump in even further. He was actually supposed to be a home birth, and at 35 weeks, my older son woke me up because he had to go to the bathroom, and he was still potty training, so I wanted to make sure everything actually got in the toilet, so I got up with him, and I sat up, and I felt this gush, and I was like, oh no, my water broke. I'm not supposed to, you can't have a home birth if your water breaks until you're at least 37 weeks, so I go to the bathroom thinking like, oh, my home birth is gone, and then turn on the light, and there's blood everywhere, and I realized, okay, this is a little more serious than I don't get to have a home birth. So we get to the hospital. Turns out it was placenta previa, and they didn't even catch it. They had even done an ultrasound, and so they stabilized me. We were going to wait a week, actually, and let him get bigger, because I always found this funny. White Caucasian male babies have this syndrome when they're born early, and this is the medical term in the NICU, was wimpy white boy syndrome. And basically it means that they don't breathe as early as females would or other nationalities babies would. So they wanted to give him some extra time to let his lungs develop. And so we were going to do that, and I really just had a feeling like, even though I don't want a C-section, I feel like we're supposed to just do it today. So we did, and I got in there, and they realized they hadn't actually stopped the bleeding. It was just all internal at that point. So I had lost a lot of blood. He was struggling a little bit. They got him out. He went straight to the NICU. Everything went kind of hazy for me. And so both of us at this point had kind of a big recovery ahead of us. I had lost a lot of blood. I had had a lot of different drugs in my body at that point, tons of antibiotics, tons of epinephrine, just stabilizing drugs, all kinds of things that make your hormones go insane. And so I was struggling. And then he was in the NICU with some breathing issues and just small and all the issues that go with the premature baby. So I knew going into it that we might have a little bit of an uphill battle with him. And surprisingly, he really started thriving. We were able to nurse, and he took off, and he quickly got right on track with weight and height and all his developmental milestones. But one of the remnants that we had of that was that he did not tolerate dairy well at all. And for him at first, this meant that he, if he got in contact with dairy even, he would get horrible red eczema on his face, and it would bleed and it would ooze and look terrible. Even from accidental exposure, he would get eczema on his arms. He would have digestive symptoms. He would be grumpy. He would melt down. It was like a complete overhaul of his personality. So we realized, obviously, that of course, he couldn't do dairy, but that we needed to address things on a different level and try to help reverse that problem. Because that's one thing I'm a big believer in, is that the body wants to be healthy. And that a lot of the things we do in modern culture stop that process of the body being able to be healthy. But that if you can give the body the right environment, it really does want to go back to health. So we took a step back. We did a ton of research. We implemented protocols like the GAPS protocol from Dr. Campbell McBride, which is, the book is called Gut and Psychology Syndrome. I also read the book Deep Nutrition by Dr. Catherine Shanahan. We implemented a mixture of the GAPS and the STD programs together. And we did that for several years. And at this point, he actually is able to consume dairy even on purpose, and as long as it's raw and organic, and he does just fine. So that was a huge breakthrough for us. And that was one of the, even before my thyroid, we figured that out, that was one of the first things that really cemented in me how much of a difference we can make with our diets and our children, and how important it is to do that early, because it's much easier to help heal the gut lining of a child who's still developing their gut bacteria and still developing that process, and especially who is still nursing, than it is someone my age who has a decade or more of all these things to try to work out and fix, and it's just a much longer process. So that's partially why I was so so impassioned that I had to do this with my kids when they were young. So even though now he tolerates dairy well, we still follow, for the most part, a grain-free, dairy-free diet. We do eat butter and ghee and that kind of thing. But we really just try to focus on the most nourishing foods possible. So we still incorporate a lot of broth and a lot of fermented foods for their probiotics, tons of green vegetables, of course, and then healthy sources of fat with every single meal, just to keep continually boosting their gut bacteria, their brain health with the good fats, their skin health, just everything across the board. So that's what we do, but the how we do it is a little harder with the kids. Because of our scheduling and our meal planning, they have thankfully gotten really in the habit of eating this way, so it's not a struggle for us anymore at all. But in the beginning it was, and so some things I found that really helped were to, first of all, the grown-ups, my husband and I, we had established a really healthy attitude about food, and really get across to the kids that, that food is for nourishment and not just for entertainment or enjoyment. You don't eat food as a hobby. You need to focus on nourishing your body with your food. And if you don't love certain foods, that's fine, but you will learn to love them as you eat them. So we really adopted that attitude with the kids, which meant we were open to trying new things, and we were open to trying new vegetables and, you know, maybe even liver, things we didn't like before, and learning to love them so our kids would see us do that. And then we just started slowly implementing new foods and new ways of cooking. So instead of always just focusing on making healthier versions of their old favorites and making a healthier pizza or a healthier shepherd's pie, but switching to more nutrient-dense meals that were just largely tons of green vegetables and sources of healthy protein and healthy fats, and not needing them to taste like foods they used to have because they had learned to love these foods. So for the little kids, that meant at first they only had to try one teeny tiny bite of each different food. So they might try one little piece of cooked spinach and one little piece of meat and one little carrot. And once they ate all of that, they could have as much as they wanted of any of those things, but they didn't have to have all of them. So if they loved like the chicken, for instance, they could eat as much chicken as they wanted and not have to eat the spinach, but it kept continually putting those foods on their palate. So they learned to start liking them. And then we just slowly started incorporating them more and more, mixing them together. And that process kind of eventually weeded itself out. And then we just really tried to encourage a healthy attitude with our kids about food. Because I know growing up, definitely by no fault of my parents, but just you associate celebrations and happy times with certain foods. Like, I think even most people would, like, birthday cake, you know, like good grades, you might go out for ice cream, just whatever it is, there was always a food connected. And I didn't want my kids to have that because I didn't want the reverse to happen. And if they were ever upset, they turned to those foods to make them happy. So we tried to do that in practical ways by, if it was their birthday, not just having a cake and having soda or whatever it is people would have for a birthday, but going somewhere or going on a trip or going to the zoo or going hiking or going camping or something that was great bonding as a family, but that didn't focus on just the junk food. And I think that that has served us well over time, and now they don't even really know about birthday cake or know about why you should eat junk food on your birthday, and they just want to go do stuff. And I think those changes take a while to implement, but if you give them something even more fun, then it's an easy transition. And every child wants time with their mom and dad. So if you let that be the focus and you give them your attention and spend time with them and the family spends time with them, that is in the long run really going to help make the transition easier. So just take the focus away from those kinds of foods and make food about nourishment and enjoyment, of course, too, but make it about nourishment. Make it something that your children just learn to expect that you're going to eat healthy food, and educate them as you go. Every child I've ever met is a sponge, and we train that out of them as they grow. But if you respect your child and how much they love to learn and put in the effort to learn yourself and then to teach them, they soak up that knowledge, and they love to know what nutrients are in which vegetable and what amino acids are in which kinds of protein. They love it, even the scientific part. And we just assume they don't care, so we don't tell them. But if you give them that respect and teach them, they really do learn to make good decisions about food themselves, because they understand what's in it. And they understand that processed foods don't provide those vitamins and those nutrients and the things that are going to make their muscles grow or their eyesight better or their hair grow or their skin healthy, because they just learn that process. So I think that's a twofold thing, is taking baby steps, even if you go cold turkey, to help your kids come around and love it, and giving them the experiences and the knowledge, and then just respecting that they understand that and that they will learn to make good decisions. And it does take a little while. It took us a few months, but now all of our kids are great eaters, and it's not a battle. So put the time in at the beginning, and it pays off in the end so much.
That's amazing. Now, Katie, would you take us through a little bit more of the practical steps of this process as well? I'm thinking, you know, how can others figure out this process for their own families, particularly when it comes to budgets? Because pretty much all of us are on a budget, and that can be an adjustment when somebody is starting with a real food lifestyle, especially if they have kids. So I know that that's something that you're familiar with five kiddos. So can you talk about that practical side for us as well?
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, we made this lifestyle switch, but I probably should have gone into a bit more detail. So, but I'll say before I do that, I don't think that necessarily our diet is the exact diet that every single person should be following. But I think that the system we used in the beginning helped us to figure out what diet our family should be following and what works for those of us with allergies and the things I can't have with my thyroid problems and the things that our son can't have with his dairy problems starting out. So what we did at first was we removed any food that can cause an allergen response or an immune response. And I have written about this recently, and I'm going to be writing about it in more detail, but I've just called it the 30-day reset, or the 30-day family reset, which really helps just take out these foods for your whole family and then reintroduce them slowly. So it's not the rest of your life. You're not cutting things out forever. You're just doing it for 30 days. And then you're adding them back in slowly just to see if anybody reacts. So if you don't, then great, you're fine with those foods. But if you do, then you know, and you can avoid them for the sake of your body. So what we removed at first, we removed grains and dairy and soy, and then we removed also nightshades, which are things like tomatoes and peppers and eggplants, and then seeds and nuts, anything that, because those all have pretty condensed sources of lectins, which can irritate the gut lining and can cause digestive problems, especially if there's already an issue going on. And what's interesting is, I was talking about stress earlier, stress can also cause gut permeability just by itself. So that's the balancing act, is even if you're doing the perfect diet, if you're under stress, you can still run into trouble. So it really is important to balance stress and not to let trying to have the perfect diet be a source of stress for you, because you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. So we removed all of those, but just for 30 days. And that's one of the things I'll make sure that we include with the summit package, is a meal plan that actually explains how to do that. Because I feel like that was the big struggle. Once I had a month of meal plans, I was like, I got this. I know exactly what I have to do, and it's only for a month. So we were focusing on a lot of foods. Like for breakfast, we would eat a lot of green vegetables stir-fried with a little bit of protein and a lot of healthy fats from coconut oil maybe, and then whatever spices were allowed, so herbs and garlic and salt and those kind of things. Lunch would almost always be a big salad with either leftovers on top or just whatever fruits and vegetables we wanted to throw on top and some protein. And then dinner, especially this time of year, we did a lot of soups and stews and that kind of thing. But again, emphasis on healing vegetables, the broths, the probiotic foods, things that were just really nourishing. And we even explained that to the kids, that we're just going to focus on like hyper nourishing our bodies for 30 days. So it was almost like a competition of who can eat the most nutrients, and that worked great with them. From a budgeting perspective, that's where the meal planning was really key, because certainly it can be much more expensive to eat this way, especially if you're just trying to replace the junk food with a healthy food version, because you can buy a junk food, probably pre-made pizza, for much cheaper than you can make one that's allergen free and healthy and all that. So it was a lot of budgeting with that, but I found that if you can use frozen vegetables, you could even afford it organic, because you can buy them in bulk. There are co-ops now. There's one called Azure that goes to most places. If not, most cities have either co-ops or farmers markets where you can buy these in bulk and either freeze them yourself or just buy them frozen. And then you have them to throw into breakfast stir fries or dinner soups or whatever it is. And a practical tip right now, so it's October for us here, and we at our farmer's market can get tons of winter squashes for pennies, like huge, huge, huge squashes for under $5. And I peel those and remove the seeds and chop them and just put them in freezer bags, and they last all year round. You can just throw them in a stir fry and they're ready to go. You can roast them in the oven with some garlic and olive oil and they taste delicious. You can puree them into a soup. And they're super budget friendly. So it takes planning, but you can absolutely do it. So that would be one budget tip, is to find the big bulk sources of vegetables and stock up when you find them. And then you can use them to make easy, quick meals. So I found when I budgeted that way, and when we got our meat from a farmer's market, even from like a cow share or a local farmer where you can buy a quarter of a cow with other families, that we were able to absolutely stretch that, especially with the squashes and the green vegetables and the cabbage. And there are just so many great vegetables that are inexpensive if you learn how to look for them and then learn how to cook them. So it took some planning for us, but I really did find if you budget correctly, you can eat this way, definitely for about the same as you could eat just a conventional diet. And I'd say if you go out to eat very often, you can definitely do it cheaper than that, because at least for us with a family of seven, you know, one meal out, that's like half our food budget. So if you make that sacrifice, at least for that initial month, and just focus on those inexpensive vegetables and nutrient-dense sources of food that are high quality, that you can stretch it and make it work, but it does take planning.
Excellent. Now, Katie, for some people who are listening and watching and who may just be starting out with exploring real food diet and are a natural lifestyle, some of this can seem overwhelming, especially, you know, if they continue to listen to this summit, which we hope they do, and they're going to get a lot of awesome information. But sometimes it can be overwhelming. So would you mind to start us off by giving us some practical tips for helping their families get on board with something that they may feel super passionate about? And again, you know, just giving our listeners some encouragement, you know, just, is this going to be a labor that lasts forever, or does it get easier as time goes by?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's one thing that's helpful to remember, especially if you're just trying to do a reset diet like this, is the hard part's only for 30 days. So that, like, you can almost always convince family members, we're just going to try this for 30 days, and then if it doesn't work, we're not going to do it anymore. So you just put in the time investment for those 30 days, and at that point, you can slowly introduce more foods and gauge your reaction, so it really isn't forever. And I found, like I mentioned, with the kids, it's the education that's the key, and letting them be a part of the planning, letting them be a part of going to the farmer's market or going to the grocery store, and let them be a part of cooking and preparing and cutting the vegetables. And they really are way more likely to eat it if they help put in the effort, because they've invested in it. I know from a lot of people I've talked to, it's usually the spouse that's harder than the children to get on board. And I have a lot of faith in people, so maybe this is naive, but I would say if your spouse, if you really explain to them where you're coming from and the statistics that our children are facing, I would think most responsible spouses and adult parents would be willing to make that sacrifice for 30 days. And if not, maybe they're at least willing to let you do it and not interfere. And maybe they're going to eat their junk food when they're at work or somewhere else, but they're going to let you eat that way with the children. So I think just going into it with a positive attitude, really budgeting and pre-planning, so you're not not in a situation where you don't have anything prepared and everybody's starving is a big key. That's definitely a way to set yourself up for failure, is to wait till everybody's starving and then have nothing in the house. And then it's so easy to just be like, okay, we have to just go get something because there's no way. So that's a big key in budgeting. And then just educating the family, just like you've been educated. Maybe for the adults, send them some of the resources that you found, or maybe send them to the summit. Maybe it'll make a difference for them. And then for the children, just put that time in to teach them about it and let them be involved, and go into it with the mindset that it's not forever and you're just trying to really figure out what works for your family, what foods work best for your family, and then to maintain that as a lifestyle and not just as a restrictive diet forever.
That's excellent. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit from food to talking about some other factors. So when it comes to living an overall healthy lifestyle, are there other factors besides just food? And I know that you, Katie, promote a whole healthy lifestyle. So what are some other, changes that we can make that can really make a big difference in the quality of our life?
Yeah, so the big two, I'll touch on several, but the big two are sleep and stress. And I think it's a twofold approach. And so I'll start with stress. We've mentioned it a little bit, but mainly from the mental side. And what people don't realize is that there are a lot of times that your body is under substantial stress that you don't feel stressed at all. And the things that create these situations are things like household cleaners that have all kinds of toxins that the body is not able to handle. And so the body either has to store these or neutralize them somehow. So the body's under all this stress. You may not feel mentally stressed at all. Same thing with personal care products. There may be chemicals in your personal care product that are a stressor on your body, and the body is having to deal with those even though you don't feel stressed at all. So stress does not just mean, oh, I've got so much to do and I'm so stressed. It means looking at your lifestyle and finding all the things that you're coming in contact with that are causing physiological stress on your body. But the great news with those is that most of the time, those are less expensive to switch, unlike real food. So if you have cleaners in your house that contain all these chemicals, like I mentioned, if your child couldn't drink it or you have to call the poison center, maybe just get it out of your house entirely. And I have recipes on my blog for homemade cleaners that you can clean everything in your house with, essentially vinegar and baking soda and washing soda and borax and liquid castile soap and essential oils. And I mean, certainly you wouldn't want to eat large amounts of any of those, but they're not toxic to the body as other chemicals are. And so we've replaced our laundry detergent, our spray cleaners, our window cleaners, everything we clean in our house, bathtub, everything. We can clean naturally with those now, and it's eliminated that source of chemicals from our lives. Same thing with scented candles. They seem so harmless and relaxing and calming, but they have all kinds, they've even been found to have heavy metals. They have airborne chemicals that can cause asthma, just all these things that they release into the air. And there are natural solutions that are less expensive. You can get a salt lamp that lasts literally forever. You just have to change the bulb. And over time, it's so much less expensive than buying scented candles. Or you can buy beeswax candles that are a great natural alternative to scented candles. Or you can make natural homemade air fresheners from simple ingredients that are chemical-free and make your house smell great. So it's finding those kinds of substitutions, and then doing it with your beauty products as well. Those, most women have, they find hundreds and hundreds of chemicals in the given woman's body. Even umbilical blood now, when a mom has a baby, has over 200 chemicals in it. And the crazy part is the placenta filters out a great majority of chemicals that a mom would pass on to her baby. So those are just the ones that get through the placenta. So every baby now is starting off with that many chemicals in their system just on the day they're born. And that's before they go into a hospital environment and get, you know, all the other ones from the cleaners. So it's finding those sources as well and removing them. And those are also less expensive. You can make your own mineral makeup for a tenth of the cost of buying the name brand mineral makeup. So you can make your own shampoo and your own lotion. And the great thing about all those is they have common ingredients. So if you buy them in bulk and just have a bunch of them, you can make literally everything from your deodorant to your toothpaste to your lotion and your shampoo for much cheaper than you can buy them. And I know for us with a big family, that's become a big part of reducing our budget so we can spend it on food. So finding those physical sources of stress, like chemicals, and removing them. And another source of stress that people don't realize is the light and the things that we come in contact with every day that differ from how our body would normally receive them. So it used to be when it got dark, you went to bed. And when it got light, you woke up. But we don't do that anymore. So we're staying up late watching TV or computers with blue lights, and then, you know, still waking up early, and then we're eating junk food in the morning, and we're creating this whole cycle of physiological stress based on our lifestyle and the systems we're creating for ourselves. So I know for us, that's been taking a step back and looking at how can we calm down after sunset and, you know, reduce our big sources of light and just focus on family time and reading and not be watching movies or not be under fluorescent lights, but give our bodies time to wind down so that our hormone patterns can get in the right balance. And like I said, Dr. Alan Christensen, who's also speaking today, go listen to him, but he's an expert at this. He's got so much great information, but really he talks about all that and how to balance your body and to do that. And the other key that most people struggle with so much is sleep. And of course, I've been a new mom for the last decade with a newborn baby, and it's very difficult when you're a mom. Thankfully, I think our bodies have some hormones that mitigate it a little bit when we have little babies, but sleep is hugely important. Everyone knows kids are typically healthier than adults, and we always just assume it's because they're kids, but they do things that promote health that we don't do. They go to sleep at the right time, you know, pretty close to sunset, a lot of them, and they take naps sometimes, and they eat when they're hungry, and they run and move, and then they rest, and they, you know, they don't get on a treadmill and do cardio for 2 hours. They just have these things naturally ingrained in them. But the sleep one is huge, and I submit that that's one of the reasons that kids are healthier than adults, is if they have a normal sleep schedule, and they go to bed early, and they maintain good sleep habits. So one thing we've really focused on in our family is creating good sleep environments. So all of our bedrooms now have blackout curtains. At night, they're completely dark. We put electrical tape over the lights, even on fire extinguishers or anything that has lights on it. The kids don't have night lights or anything like that. So it creates a completely dark room, because they now have even found that if there's even a little bit of light, especially blue light, the body senses it, and it's not even as simple as wearing a sleep mask, because the skin can even sense that. So it's important to really create a completely dark sleep environment. And things like in the winter, not in the winter, but like the fall and the spring, when the temperatures are nice but varied, we open the windows a little bit. I've always said I never sleep better than when we're camping and it's a little bit cold. It's completely dark. I'm a little bit cold, but I'm in a sleeping bag, so I'm warm. And the body loves that environment. So creating that type of environment in all of our sleep rooms, getting rid of the light, getting rid of not having cell phones near our heads, all that kind of stuff, and just creating an environment that we go and we sleep. We've now even transitioned to organic mattresses, which are a big expense, but we saved for a long time, because you spend a third of your life on your mattress. And a lot of mattresses have chemicals and flame retardants and everything else in them, so you want to find ways to get those physical stressors out of your life if you're able as well. So creating a good sleep environment and then a good sleep schedule, which I will admit is my kryptonite. It's the hardest thing for me in the world to go to sleep. I have a note on my desktop with 400 post ideas that I want to write, and that some of them I've already started writing and I want to share them, but it's realizing like, no, when it's 9:30 at night, I need to turn it off and go to bed and let my sleep and let my family be the most important thing. And if I don't take care of myself and address my sleep and address my stress, that I'm not going to be good for my family, and I'm not going to be good for anyone else on the blog either. So those are the big two lifestyle factors, especially realizing stress is not just mental. And that's a big one for a lot of people. And just take a step back and look at your household and all the things you come in contact with, from your laundry detergent to your makeup to every nail polish, you know, and get rid of those sources of chemical stress that your body has to deal with.
That's excellent. So, Katie, I want to ask you to finish up. What would be your top three action steps for somebody who is just starting out with living a natural lifestyle that they can take today?
Yeah, great question. So my first one is always, always meal plan. And there's going to be a lot of great resources that go along with the summit to help you do that, even some pre-planned meal plans that you can get. But just whatever it is going to be for your family, I really suggest that 30-day reset and just like hyper-stimulate your body with nourishing real foods. But even if it's not that, just plan your real food, nutrient-dense meals that are going to be right for your family, and just do it for 30 days. Make that commitment, plan it so you're not stressed out about it, and just implement it. Meal planning is so huge. And then my second one would be to just write down, like take, do an analysis of your stress in your life and figure out all those sources of stress that I just talked about, and then start finding ways you can check them off. So even if it's just one, even if you just replace one chemical in your house, that's a baby step, and you've accomplished that, and then it's so much easier to do the next one because you have the ingredients on hand and you've already started doing it. So that would be just find one source of stress, whether it's mental, whether it's chemical, whether it's physical, and check it off your list. And then just start going through them, and as many of those as you can get out of your life, do it. And then the third one would be to sleep like a baby, because babies really could teach us a lot when it comes to sleep. And figure out a good sleep schedule, give yourself a bedtime, and stick to it as much as you would if it was your child's bedtime. I know every mom I know, it's their bedtimes are as much for us as ours are, because that's our time at night when we get a little bit of quiet and a little bit of time with our spouses. But give yourself a bedtime too, and don't waver from it. Set an alarm if you have to, but get yourself in bed at the time that you need to, that you can work with, but that gets you enough sleep. There is so much research and more every day on the importance of sleep, and how even if you're doing everything else right, not sleeping will give you a higher risk of diabetes and heart attack and cancer, and how the opposite is also true, because sleep affects your cortisol pattern so much. If you are sleeping correctly, you get a lot more leeway. And if you mess up with your diet or you mess up with your lifestyle, so sleep is so important. Give yourself a bedtime and stick to it.
That's excellent. Katie, you've given us so many awesome tips today and some great advice for anybody, whether they just be starting out living a real food and healthy lifestyle, or if they're a little bit farther along on the journey. Your tips have been invaluable. So I just want to thank you again for taking the time out of your day to talk with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I hope that many of you will make these changes and that future does change for our kids.
Absolutely. And thank all of you, of course, for watching. And we'll see you again soon at the Wellness Family Summit. Have a good one.